welcome back to another episode of Tea Talk brought to you by FlagStick.com. Sit down in the studio with my co-host Scott McCloud. Scotty, how are you?
Doing great. Getting close to golf season.
Closer.
We are getting closer. The weather looks good. We actually have another guest in the studio today.
We do.
Our first ever guest, and he just keeps on coming back anytime we ask because he's our favorite.
Because the rent's free.
The rent is free. The beer is cold.
Yeah.
Ryan DeVoe, how are you, buddy?
Very good. Thank you guys for having me again. I think this is my hat trick visit.
Hat trick.
It is.
Wow.
It is.
First triple.
Beauty.
Well, what's good with you right now? You're obviously caddying it on the LPGA for Mel Reed this year. A little bit of a break and kind of a little bit of who knows where we're going from here, you could say, with the coronavirus. So what's up with you right now?
Yeah, that's certainly accurate. A considerably longer break at home than I had anticipated, which was pretty easy to swallow, to be honest. Obviously, those decisions to cancel the Asia events were well above my head. And
pay grade, too.
Yeah, pay grade, too. Green reading skills, too, just way above a lot of it.
He brings that up first. We
I
don't have
to. I thought if I brought
That's
it
good.
Up, it would save me from some of it.
Can't beat the joke again.
Yeah, it's obviously an interesting situation. I've been home for almost a month now, heading back on the road again soon. Hopefully not missing many more tournaments, but it's obviously something that needs to be respected. So we'll see. The tour updates us pretty quick as they hear things, so we'll have to see. Hopefully we get all the events in, but we'll see.
How much notice did you get when they canceled the Asian Swing?
So we were in where was it there?
Australia?
Boca. We were in Boca, and there was a pretty big buzz about it. Not in the sense that it had been in the media too much compared to how it has been recently, but we got all notified in Boca that there was certainly going to be a chance that those events would be canceled in Singapore, Thailand,
mm-hmm.
and then they had a full field event in China. They switched
the Blue Bay.
To a full field. In Boca, they had told us, actually first, I believe before the tournament ended, that China was in fact going to be canceled.
Right, that was the first one.
And at that point, when we were all still there, with a week to go before two Australian events, they were still more, in my opinion, more than optimistic that Singapore and Thailand, which are the invite top 60-ish players on the money list events, that they were still going to be going ahead. So we all went to Australia, maybe a little bit skeptical, but certainly more optimistic, in my opinion, that those events would happen. And I can't recall if it was the first week in Victoria or the Aussie Open, but they went ahead and obviously canceled those events too.
How does that affect you? I mean, obviously it affects you financially, but I mean, when that happens, you know, what's the situation? You're calling the travel stuff right away and trying to get that cleared up. I mean, a lot of that you've got to book in advance, right?
Yeah, you certainly do. I mean, I would say that I typically try to have stuff booked in at least a month in advance. It was a tough spot in the sense of looking after those things. The tour was pretty clear that they were going to try to help as much as they could right away. For me, I was lucky. I had pretty good airline status, humble brag, but
weird flex,
but I was lucky enough that we got our stuff sorted pretty quick. But there are certainly caddies and players who were concerned about maybe they're going to get reimbursement for flights, hotels, things like that that aren't refundable. So in the sense of that I personally didn't have as much worry going on, but The mood was tense, I would say, on tour.
Did you hear any players sort of maybe changing plans, trying to get into those Australia events, knowing that, you know, Blue Bay had been canceled and possibly the other Asian events were going to be? I mean, there wasn't a lot of spaces to get, but,
correct.
You know.
Yeah. Well, it was an interesting thing because those two events in Australia, a lot of the players, maybe not a lot, I don't know the exact numbers, but if you're in Singapore, Thailand, those are invite-only, no-cut events that are kind of like a head start on the rest of the tour. So a lot of girls actually would skip both Australia events,
right?
And even maybe wouldn't have come to Florida for the first only singular event because they want to either stay in their home countries. So there are a lot of players. I would assume that Phoenix will be their first start.
Yeah.
So that's going to be an
interesting, super big layoff.
And also it's going to be interesting because not like the players in Thailand, Singapore really need too much of a head start anyways because they're on the more elite level of players.
Sure, yeah, the top row.
But it's going to be interesting to see how that affects the maybe the before 100th ranked and above 100th ranked players that now maybe they're thinking, oh, I'm not that far behind the eight ball to start the season, and and it's going to be interesting to see.
Well, you wonder. I mean, like you said, if those players don't think they're that far behind, are there other players that are going to be in the opposite end of that going, you know, I don't know if I can make ends meet.
Yeah.
You know, especially ones farther down that maybe don't have as much financial support.
Certainly.
I mean, you know, I haven't talked to any specific players, but I can certainly imagine any of the players that are lower down that don't have the resources that maybe the top players do, you know, might be considering doing something else at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting, too, to see going forward. Hopefully, obviously. Obviously, like, the health concern with the coronavirus is the most important thing, and I don't want to sound like that's like golf is bigger than health, but certainly in the golf aspect of things, it's going to be interesting to see how the season shapes up for scheduling decisions the girls have to make, and like you said, financially, like, there are going to be girls who have their 1 week early, and now, wow, a girl who always just wanted to keep her card, you're going to see her confidence shoot up, because and I feel like you're going to see a couple more players than in the past that you're like, wow, I really didn't see a tougher year coming from you. And if the starts aren't there, it's kind of put up or shut up as the season goes on.
You got that right. But we'll dive into the LPGA at some point again. And it's just nice to see you back. I know, you know, you'd rather be out there and looping, but you're enjoying it. Playing a little hockey. We ran into each other last night.
Yeah, we did last night. I was behind the bench.
Yeah, got moved to coach. Well, so the team that my team was playing, I was moved to the crowd. So at least
we were both
still.
We were both moved, it would appear.
Yeah. You were moved off closer the to the team, but I digress.
They need to get a caddy of the water bottles.
Yeah, yeah. I can't even do that. I can't even get a caddy of water bottles, let alone an actual bag on any tour at this point. So, who knows? Let's hop into the Arnold Palmer Invitational wrapped up this week. What an interesting start to the Florida Swing. Very hard golf courses. You know, like Rory blasting one like 350 through a fairway on a par five and making double like that.
Did
that
you
is
see the mathematical.
Yes,
lines
he could hit the green.
And obviously, in theory, he just like nuked one, and you would never take that line. But it was so interesting to see the math of that. That had he have taken it with the 80 or 90 yards left, like he's driving the green, and obviously then he bogeyed too. So that was.
I thought it was entertaining. I mean, I didn't watch a lot of it, but you know, you started to see those greens get a little edgy there. They're starting to look a little purple. I mean, even the practice green they're showing, it looked like, you know, some guy's garage and his you know, his linoleum floor or something that they're trying to putt on and stop a ball. So, you know, to see players have to be, you know, kind of pushed. And I don't think that's a bad thing leading into this week, especially if we're, you know, dealing with the players and things like that. They definitely had to earn their dollars.
Yeah, that was actually, I was hanging with some buddies watching that, which I would say is kind of rare for me to watch golf unless it's a major. I really enjoy watching that. I think it's good when you have to see physical and mental tests, because it's very clear that when conditions are average or easy, those guys are going to tear it up. So in my opinion, it's fun to watch when par is a good score.
Yeah. Do you think it better identifies the player? I mean, the one that's playing well? Because a lot of times maybe, you know, softer conditions can let players just kind of get away with some
things. Yeah, 100%. I think when it tends to be softer conditions, in my opinion, that it's easier for some players to win with their B games. I like tournaments like the Honda or the Arnold Palmer, I'm sorry.
They're both. I mean, they both were single
both
digits.
Yeah, they both were similar. Yeah. I like tournaments like that because I feel like you definitely need to have more of an A or A minus or A plus game, but you also your mental game has to be really strong.
And the thing about this tournament, though, it kind of threw a lot of people for a loop of how hard it was, and by a lot of people, that was the highest score of this tournament in history. If you go back to the Florida Citrus Open Invitational in 1966, where your boy Lionel Hubert picked up the win.
Lionel Hebert.
At 279. 284 was definitely the highest.
What was the tournament called?
Citrus Open.
The Florida Citrus Open Invitational. How can it be an open and an invitational?
I feel like that should be like and a flavor should, of white claw.
They should have classic on the end of that too. Yeah. Right? Yeah. Open Invitational Classic?
Pro-Am?
Yeah. That should be like a seltzer, a hard seltzer.
Yeah. Hey, Jack finished two strokes back that tournament. But I digress. Minus four was last year was minus 12. The year before was minus 18 with Rory McIlroy. Like, this is kind of what you're used to at here. It's maybe it's just the weather down in Florida, or maybe they just decided to completely change their approach to the tournament, and Tyrell Hatton picks up a win at -4. He's clearly not complaining. What a great guy, I love Tyrell Hatton. This guy is entertaining. If there was, I know the players this week, they're doing a, you know, you can watch any shot at all.
Every shot live.
If they did that on the, but with you got them mic'd up the whole round, I would pay good money to watch Tyrell Hatton for a full round.
As he would probably have to pay good money in fines. As well.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing about watching him is just the fact you don't know what's going to happen next.
That's golf, and emotionally.
Yeah, 100%.
He's very raw.
So it's obviously, you know, 11, he hits that ball in the water and he's going nuts or whatever, and you're thinking, okay, well, this guy's either going to implode.
Yeah.
Or he's going to probably just survive and win it. And obviously, he survived and won it.
Yeah.
But I think that makes him entertaining. I mean, some people might have been offended by, you know, some of the things that he did. But, you know, he obviously played the best.
Who do you think the closest comparison on the LPGA Tour to Tyrell Hatton is? Just emotional, you know, wears his heart, her heart on her sleeve and just...
I mean, I would say that, like, this is certainly not a comparison in to how it translates to their game. Because I think this person's a really great player. One of my close friends is caddying for right now. But I would say Christy Kerr. Hmm. Christy Kerr, now I'll be clear before I compare them. Christy Kerr wears her emotions on her sleeve, but in my opinion, that works very well for her.
Sure. Like Tyrell Hatton.
Yeah.
Right?
But and it's interesting because I'm sitting there watching Tyrell Hatton at the Arnold Palmer, and I'm like, as a fan, not as a golf professional, I'm like, this guy is going to lose the tournament because he wants, you know, he can't keep his head together. Whereas the comparison that you asked me, you know, I think that Christy needs to wear her emotions on her sleeve to get either over things or get like to the objective she wants to get to. So that would be a comparison, but I think it works very well.
I'd agree. I've seen her up close and seen her performances and definitely.
It was a very entertaining week, though, obviously, and it came down right to the end, which I really appreciated the last couple weeks where, you know, there's been tournaments lately where you're like, yeah, this guy's got a three-stroke lead. He's got it. Where, you know, he had two-stroke lead going into Sunday.
Oh, that
nobody guaranteed it at all, which made it entertaining, and I do love that. Even if you think about places like the Masters, you know, Augusta, you know, a two-stroke lead, you're probably going to find a way, unless you're Jordan Spieth, to figure out how to win.
Yeah.
Just a quick jab at Jordan there for no reason. Just a ricochet.
He's gonna be upset when he's listening to this.
Yeah, he's pretty bummed out. We got him in studio next week.
The only problem with those events like that where you've got to watch is it really cuts into Sunday nap time because you can't really plan for a nap when somebody's leading by six. You go, whatever.
Yeah.
I can go have a nap and wake back up and watch the last four holes. But
definitely.
You didn't want to miss this one.
Going into Sunday, was it Rory or Hatton at seven?
It was Hatton at six.
I was saying, yeah. Well, I was saying to the boys, like we were watching, and you know the leaders are teeing off, and I'm like, obviously we got to see how the day's going to pan out, but I'm like, I think five's good for a playoff. You know, it's in my opinion, it's entertaining, as you said. There are a lot of events, some events on the PGA Tour and the LPGA Tour where, like you said, when someone has a three-shot lead on the back nine, you're turning the channel because it's fun to watch, but it's over. Like, there's no drama.
It's interesting, though. I mean, we talk about Hatton and his emotions. You look at the top four players, DeChambeau at fourth was, you know, pretty much the same. And then
saw it when he made the birdie on 18 to get to one. He thinks he's still in the tournament.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And then him and Leishman are obviously more robot-like in the middle of the two. But, you know, you're either one or the other in those top four on the leaderboard. So it shows you can definitely win in different ways, especially from an emotion standpoint.
Speaking
that's
for sure. of Sanjay, I saw a tweet that he obviously had a different caddy on the bag this week after winning with Albin Choi.
Wow.
Someone said something along the lines of another caddy this week. And I said, well, you know, when you work 80 hours a week for Sanjay, you can't work 2 weeks in a row.
It's certainly probably long weeks. Long weeks I would sign up for, but obviously.
Well, his caddy from last year, he's now looping for Kevin Chappell. And we were
Wait, who's that?
I
Is it Brian Vranish?
That makes sense, sure.
Yeah, he used to be on the LPGA with Bronte Lott.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Tall guy?
Yeah, super tall guy.
Yeah, so Brian Varanish. He used to play, I think, actually, as well.
Yeah, we were paired together at the Greenbrier, so front row seat to the 59. Not a big deal.
Oh, I remember you said that.
Yeah.
He was probably playing so good, you probably told him about your club fitting.
That's where I went.
He was trying not to get killed by him after the day before.
I kind of had an incident.
That's pretty sick that you saw 59.
I did. But he said that literally every single day with Sungjae last year was a 12-hour day. And he got to the course at 8 and he left basically at 6 to 8 sometime in between. Him after his practice day or anything. Like, that's got to be exhausting. Have you ever had somebody to that degree? Or like close even?
Yeah, I mean, there are certainly players that I've caddied for and on the LPGA Tour that are known for like religiously putting in hours and you know what you're getting into each day. Off the top of my head, I can't think of anyone I've had that have been super, super long hours, but we definitely have buddies out there where when we're getting there at 10 a.m. and they're getting there at 7, we know we're not making dinner plans with them. And,
exactly.
And, you know, we get there 3 hours before and we're finishing before and – it just, I mean, I feel like it comes with the territory, obviously, of like being a caddy because you're basically providing information, you're getting along with your boss, and you're doing what you're told.
Exactly.
So if you're lucky enough to have a boss that.
A boss, just end the sentence. There.
Yeah, certainly a boss. if you're lucky enough to have a boss that maybe doesn't grind like clockwork every day, it's obviously a little easier on you and your body, but I feel like most caddies would say that. If you're putting in 12-hour days and success is falling on the golf course, you really wouldn't care.
A couple other good stories coming out of the weekend. Matt Avery was -7 after the first day. Had the weekend off still.
Oh, yeah, I did see that too.
-7 to 84, I believe, the second day. Like, what do you say to a guy after that? Like, you're a vet out there.
Enjoy
on
the
tour.
Weekend?
I was watching this trying to come up, like, if I had to actually say something as we get off 18 – like, what am I going to say? Just, like, there's straight to the trunk?
Yeah, pretty much.
I feel like there's nothing to be said. No. I feel like the writing's on the wall there. There's just too many strokes, but that's tough. I mean,
there's nothing going to make him feel better.
Well, we actually had a situation like that, me and Mel, in Victoria. I don't remember the exact forecast, but
the wind was certainly
blowing, like, on the weather app, like 30.
Yeah,
we had a shot. We hit a 7-iron stock, like 160, and we had a 105-yard shot on 10, like pretty much straight into maybe like 1 o'clock, like little right to left, mostly into. It's 105, and we hit a full 7-iron.
was the day they closed the beach.
And
there's a secondary cut,
and we were like, I mean, maybe like 40th place, but we were well aware that even would put us in position to win. I think we shot 80 or 81.
Wow.
And she handled it differently than hypothetically. No, we missed.
Okay.
But to what you were saying, it wasn't the same scenario as every, I feel like, because like we were just like, you didn't play that bad. Like, yeah, like you shot a bad score, but it's just in conditions like that or tough golf courses like that, it very quickly identifies if you're not playing well that you're gonna get hammered. So yeah, it's interesting to see how players respond to that too, because you can't be in this profession if you're not just gonna brush that off. Yeah, you know, like there's a call to your coach and a here's what went wrong and how can we fix it, but I feel like if you gotta be kinda like attendee in NHL, like if you don't forget quick, like you're
toast, absolutely. Yeah. One other thing from a caddy perspective that I saw on the weekend that irked me a little bit. Scottie Scheffler. Notice this. So fun hole. This is where I noticed that he pulls off a near albatross.
I saw that.
Makes an eagle on the same hole that Ricky triples him up with a 9. Really funny. But
Are they in the same group?
Same group.
Wow.
Yeah same group. We got an almost like itch. I don't know how this ball didn't go in for an albatross.
Because it was like not dead weight, but it was like only going to be 5 or 6 feet past.
Yes.
Hit the middle of the
straight. Yeah, and then popped the right, tap and eagle. Not a big deal.
Man, I watch so much golf.
Yeah, this is really weird. You're better at your job than I am. wait, my job than I am. Sorry. but Scheffler, he's got a blank bag.
Yeah.
Just white all over. Only thing on it was just his name. Mm-hmm. And he still got the tour bag out there. And I just thought, like, I just watched it. It was like, I'm sure Scottie Scheffler's a great guy. And I'm sure he just probably doesn't care that much. But I was like, couldn't you help your caddy out for a few weeks and just get a carry bag, like a stand bag? I like from my perspective.
Well, Ricky was rocking one. Ricky, yeah. He had the Puma Arnold Palmer one, but he had a standbag.
Standbags all the time. There's a rule on the LPGA. I think you can only have like 2 weeks out of the year with a standbag. They must not have that on the PGA because Ricky had it at
Waste Management. Yeah, all the Ping guys had them at Waste Management. But from my perspective, and maybe the times I've caddied, the guy I've caddied for doesn't bring a lot other than just a ton of sunscreen. there's not that much in there that can't be fit into a regular bag. So what do you think? You don't have sponsors.
I feel like you just hit the biggest nail on the head, and is like, if he doesn't have a sponsor, probably 80 or 90% of his reasoning is that he's trying to, on a bigger canvas, advertise he wants one.
Maybe.
So that's exactly what he's doing. That's why it's not like, oh, I'm going to put multicolors. He wants it to stand out, and he wants companies to know. I don't know him personally.
Your ad here on the side?
May as well.
I don't know him personally, obviously, but I would say probably almost with 100% confidence that's what he's going for.
That's fair.
But another thing for me personally as a caddy, I actually kind of do prefer to have the bigger bag, because this happens very rarely, but if you look at the weather forecast and it's 5 or 10% chance of rain, obviously, this is going to sound stupid maybe to a lot of people who are listening, but even if you take an umbrella out of a golf bag, you can definitely notice the weight difference 100%. As a caddy.
Oh yeah.
But the one time it says 5% rain,
it's raining,
and you take the umbrella and the rain gear out,
you're needed.
You won't do it again. Yeah. So in my opinion, I like to have the pockets. I like to be able to take most of the stuff. But in regards to my first point, I would almost guarantee it's because he's trying to advertise. He's looking for sponsors.
I like that. Never even thought about that.
Well, there you go. That's why we have a professional caddy. Oh, sorry. A more professional caddy here.
Yeah, we've got two professional caddies here. I feel like his Golf Town roles reverse my caddy roles, because I worked at Golf Town for a bit, but I was below him there. But maybe I'm a little above in caddying. So.
A little is a very nice way to put it.
I think I've probably caddied as many pro tournaments as holes you pro caddy.
Wow. Now,
I don't know if it's a brag or not, but I'm probably close to 100.
Yeah, I've got...
three tournaments,
two PGA tours, and then two McKenzie tours. And so 2 weekends on the McKenzie tour. So let's call 144. Sure.
Yeah, you got me.
Yeah, sweet.
I'm not doing math. I'm old.
No. Speaking of equipment, we're gonna get into a little bit of couple rumors here. Scotty doesn't like it, but I'm bringing it up anyway. Justin Rose. No longer playing Honma equipment.
Really?
The word is they were waiting to make a statement after the Arnold Palmer Invitational, but here we are on Tuesday and there's no statement.
Do you know if his contract came up or if he just decided to ditch?
No, he just signed with them. So
last year.
Yeah. So
I remember all those Morgan Stanley ads came out and he had.
He's got all missed cuts this year except for a T56 was his best finish. He's only had 4 or 5 starts. But he had all TaylorMade in his bag except for, I think he had some Vokey wedges.
I know it was only like a 10 club deal, right?
Yeah, but whatever the case, I mean, they're obviously, he has not been playing well. So whether he's went back to them and said, hey, maybe
you can just terminate the contract, or maybe they didn't renew.
Or who knows? I mean, he might still be under the contract and they've just said, why don't you ease into something? We'll work on some other equipment for you.
You like Titleist, we'll make you a Titleist set.
Whatever the case may be. I mean, they'll work him into it or whatever. They he's obviously still, I think, number 14 in the world. So you don't want to shy away from him too quickly. Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at some stats. So let's go over the last 3 years here to give a good comparison. So 2017, he's obviously still with TaylorMade. Didn't win that year. Picked up $4 million. I think that's a good year.
Was his U.S. Open 2016?
That would have been 2015, okay. if I am correct.
Yeah,
it looks like no. 2014.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's a little while.
24. No, oh my, it's even Mary? Further. We might have to go back to
2010.
We are at
it's not 10.
Oh my gosh, were we still watching were we still on dial up internet when this
probably
when happened?
I'm completely lost when he won this U.S. Open. I'm just looking at his stats here, and I apologize to the listeners here for having to deal with this. I can't even find the information.
2013.
Okay. Well, my bad.
Yeah, 13 and Marion.
We're keeping that in. Doesn't matter. Okay, we're going to just go back to 2016. Okay, sorry. Didn't win that year. Picked up $2 million. 2017, didn't win that year. Picked up $4 million, so he's still a TaylorMade.
Okay.
2018, still a TaylorMade. Picked up 2 wins, 3 seconds, a third, 11
wow, that
top 10s.
Like $10 million.
$8 million. pretty good. Yeah. And then he switches over to TaylorMade, or from TaylorMade to Honma. Oh, wow. Last year, still had a great year. Picked up a win. Still had 7 top 10s in 17 events, $4 million.
Wow, that's unbelievable.
And then as Scott mentioned there, 5 events, 3 cuts, only 98,000
this
year. Yeah. So who
like
knows?
It seems like a hair of a snap decision after 5 events. Obviously, I'm not involved or know him personally, but like that seems a little quick for a world-class player. I could get it if you're like, okay, I'm like a rookie or
journeyman.
Second. Yeah, and yeah, I really need to maximize. But I mean, obviously he knows his game, but that's interesting.
Just something to look out for. Maybe by the time this podcast comes out, there's a statement involved.
Yeah, there could
but
be. I mean, the thing is, too, we don't know. You know, there could be something else. We're talking about equipment. We're talking about performance. There could be other factors there. Yeah. And we see that as we'll begin to talk about maybe some other things and some changes for equipment as well. So, you know, a lot of people will guess, lots of speculation. But I guess, as you said, we'll probably find out pretty soon.
Absolutely. In other news, Billy Horschel and Chad Reavy, neither of them are playing PXG clubs anymore.
Yep.
There have been statements made about them. And there's some other rumors going on about them and the actual tour equipment
manager,
I guess.
Yeah,
sorry.
So Matt Rollins, who's a longtime tour rep and has been working for PXG for a number of years, he's good friends with those guys. And he was let go. He was replaced by Joel Kreibel, who went to Stanford.
Okay.
And so Kreibel used to run their college program, and he took over for Matt Rollins. Matt is very well known. Has a lot of loyalty. He's an Arizona guy.
Was he a ping guy before?
Yeah,
that,
he
was.
Is
that the guy I'm
thinking
about?
Exactly. Yeah, okay. And Ches Reavy is a good friends with him, so I'm not surprised there. And then it just looks like it's a support thing. I don't think it comes down to performance or things like that. And that's what I'm talking about, you know, when we're talking about Rose. Is there something that's changed there from a relationship standpoint? I don't think it's that with Rose because, you know, John Kawaja is involved with Honma and formerly at TaylorMade and has a great relationship with Rose and previously had. So it might be something, it might be just something else. Who knows? But it's interesting how some of the things happen. And really, when it comes down to it nowadays, you know, I was talking to another equipment manufacturer the other day, and really for the size of some of these contracts, especially if you're not the top guys, you know what? For the size of the contract, you can go and make just as much money being successful with whatever brand. You don't necessarily need a brand in your bag for the PGA Tour.
I think like a perfect, like, quick thought example of it, that would have been like when Bubba was playing the Volvic ball.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how much money he was offered or if that was in the press, but like I feel like you've got to get like $4 or $5 million to consider if you have a poor year, where like I think when he came back to Titleist he won 2 events or something, right?
And he did have a poor year that year.
Yeah.
I don't have the exact stats in front
of me. I just remember it being bad for a year, and then I think he won like 2.
And in most cases, I mean,
and like, I'm not chirping the
but that's the case when you're dealing with the top guys, and when you're dealing with the mid guys now, the money is not
like
the same.
It's like $125,000.
Yeah, exactly. Really? The money's not like it used to be. So basically you go out there and have a top, you know, 15 finish.
And you've made the endorsement contract.
Exactly, you've made the money. So,
well, Brooks did that, right? Forever? Like, or is he still doing it?
Still
like,
doing it. Mixed bag.
Yeah. He just had the Nike bag.
Shot 81 this weekend, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to get into Brooks. I have a problem with Brooks right now.
I'm a Brooks, fan.
Brooks is hurt.
Well, we're going to.
Brooks is still not 100%.
Oh, he has knee or something's on that angle?
He's still not 100%.
We're going to get to Brooks later.
All right.
I got some thoughts about Brooks. But just to wrap that up, I think a lot of the speculation around PXG with Horschel for a while is, you know, he obviously won the FedEx Cup in 2014. Mm-hmm. He still was on ping for a couple of years after that. Mm-hmm. The last couple of years weren't his worst years by any means. He made $4 million. He made $2 million. So I'm just kind of trying to
You got to remember though, there's ins and outs and things that happen. There are other athletes that have started playing PXG and they're gone or whatever. And who knows if it's related to Bob Parsons? Bob Parsons is a one strike guy. You know, he likes loyalty. He likes things his way. He's a billionaire, made his money at GoDaddy, has his other interests as well, his Harley dealership, everything.
Yeah.
You know what?
But really supports the military, but he's either into stuff or he's not.
That's exactly it. And when it comes down to the people working for him and doing stuff, if they screw up, he might just say bye-bye. You know, some people can handle that, some people can't. I mean, you also know what you're getting into when you sign with PXG and what the company's about. But, you know, maybe sometimes it just doesn't, you know, continue to sit well with people.
Absolutely. Did you guys see Twitter this weekend? There was a golf course where Have you those GPS screens?
Yeah,
I saw
the tweet, but
yeah. So you know when you're at the golf course, you're in a cart, and there's the GPS,
yeah, it's
and
like
it shows
as you them. Move, it moves with you.
Yeah,
exactly.
Like order
the
your
you are
order
here, the
yeah,
you are here
order
thing.
Your sandwich when you get to the ninth tee, yeah. And it'll be ready for you on 10.
Yeah,
but
and
sometimes
a couple waters,
and sometimes it doesn't say that.
Yeah, so I assume this guy, his wife didn't want him at the golf course. And now there's a message pops up.
Oh, I did see
and it
this.
It says, message from Clubhouse. Please come off the golf course immediately. There's a lady with a gun on the course.
Man.
What a warning. I mean.
What do you do? Do you?
I feel like I'm not concerned about coronavirus anymore.
No.
No.
I'll go on any golf course now.
Yeah. I sent in my buddy and he's dating a girl just fresh. And I said, when she realizes you play golf 7 days a week, this is the message popping up on the golf course some point. So I thought that was funny. Just something I saw on Twitter.
I did see that. That made me laugh.
You just sort of hope you remember it like a golf course with like 36 holes. So you can really hide far away.
No, absolutely. And I don't think anyone was hurt from it. So no. We can laugh at it now. PGA Tour announced today or yesterday or whenever this comes out at some point this week when this podcast came out, their new media rights deal. Scotty, you're the expert. You probably read all the lawyer documents and all that.
Oh, I didn't read
stuff,
all of it. It's complicated, but
why don't you give us a quick breakdown of what we're talking about?
The Coles notes. Well, so basically they've already done their international deal, which they did last year with Discovery TV, and they have Golf TV, and it was a $12 billion deal. This is basically the rights deal for their domestic rights. So obviously in the United States, they decided to continue the relationship with NBC Sports, their group, Golf Channel, as well, CBS. It's a 9-year deal, and basically CBS will have about 18, 19 events on average. NBC will have 9 events on average. They'll rotate the 3 FedEx Cup events. They did not disclose the amount. Sports Journal had it tagged around $700 million, although I saw exaggerations as much as a billion. But I will say when Jay Monahan, and we'll probably get to that a little bit, he addressed the media today at the Players' Championship. He said, you know, obviously there's a lot of value in there in the fact that it's starting in 2022. It's locked up to 2030. It'll have a significant contribution to the purses and the value for the players. Digital coverage now will go to ESPN Plus, so that's new. So they've got a relationship now with Disney, which is pretty kind of cool there for them. Yeah. They basically can give them access to about 50 million unique eyeballs for that. The other side of it as well is they had the LPGA as a partner as part of the negotiations, so they're going to get expanded coverage out of that. They'll still continue with their anchor programming on the Golf Channel, and then they're supposed to get expanded exposure on NBC and CBS. So this kicks in 2022, runs to 2030. Big money for the tour, and it's just going to add to the purses and add for the exposure for the tour.
More money for caddies too.
Yeah,
more money for everyone.
I think the big thing here is, do they change, right? And I think what I mean by that is, you know, you spent all that money. Mm-hmm. Are you actually going to change your programming, or are you just going to add in more sponsors?
No.
And there's just going to be more and more commercials. I will give NBC credit. Maybe I was just hyper aware of it recently. I feel like the last couple of weeks while being on NBC have been miles better than what we were watching with CBS. Maybe I'm
yeah,
crazy.
I think the problem here is that a lot of the opinions are being shaped by certain influences within social media. And I think that you're seeing that as well. The truths of it are much different than what people go rampant with on social media. So even in discussions today, Jay Monahan was addressing that of where they're going to take things. And they say the future of their program is what you're starting to see, going to see at the Players Championship this week. And their goal is to get so that the PGA Tour, you're going to see every shot at every tournament. They've got a drone in the air this week, expanded coverage. This is part of the money that they're going to have to do it. So that's part of their plan. Now they are taking over doing more of the production facilities on site. They have that, although, you know, NBC and CBS will still have their broadcast teams and their production. Certainly they're going to control things in a different way, but they've got the cash cow. So they know, and they say, you know what, we've been listening. We're listening to fans. This is not something that's just a knee-jerk reaction on Twitter on an afternoon. They're working on this long-term, and they have been for a number of years, to grow and create a better product for consumers.
I feel like what you're going to see, too, in the future, and obviously, like, I don't bet on golf because that's obviously not allowed.
Yeah.
But this is going to be a huge avenue for the way
totally.
People are going to watch a broadcast, whether you are betting or not.
Yep.
it is that you're going to be able to bet on every shot,
correct,
whether it's a year or two or five.
Yep.
And that's going to be a big market, going back to what we were talking about earlier.
And that was part of his mention
those
today.
Those four or five shot leads on the back nine, they're going to keep, I don't know numbers of viewership, but I would imagine they're going to keep 5, 10, 20% more viewers, mm-hmm, when there's a five-shot lead, because people are going to bet on second. People, yep, are going to, mm-hmm, bet if Phil is going to, yep, go make an eagle on 16. Like, it's, I think that's a direction you're going to see TV going when those avenues are created.
I think those are all great points. I think we can wrap up the PGA Tour media deal at this point. We got a lot more to get into after the break. We have our LPGA stand-in caddy with us, Ryan DeVoe. So he's going to sit in. We're going to talk more about the players. We're going to talk about our mailbag is open. We haven't had a third person for the mailbag ever. We're going to play.
That'd be interesting.
Wow.
We're going to play birdie versus bogey as well, a game you've never played.
I'm excited.
And maybe we usually do a tip from the coach at the end.
Make it a tip from
maybe
the caddy.
Maybe we'll do a caddy tip as, wow, well at the end. So
I like
first
it.
One's free. You got it.
Absolutely. his daily's expensive. Scott, are you paying him this week? I
no.
forgot my
wallet.
We'll be back after the break. All right, time to talk about the Players' Championship. We're going to make some picks, talk about our thoughts on the championship overall. Should it actually be a fifth major? We touched on this a little bit, but maybe we'll get Dez's opinion on it this week. But it's the Players' Championship this week. What are your thoughts on the tournament? Does it get a lot of buzz from you?
For me or Dez?
Either
what
one
do
of
you want? For me, for sure. You know, we've talked about it in relationship to the other big events or whatever, but you know, it is the Players' Championship. You do have the pretty much the best field in golf. This is an event people want to win because 2.7 million to the winner,
I saw that too. That's
which is insane.
Third, $1 million.
Yeah. That's insane. Yeah, 15 million purse, and you know what? It's just going to get higher. I mean, Jay Monahan actually talked about
it. Today it was like
25 million. He said that's the direction where it's heading based on the purses and everything. He didn't say it wasn't a hard commit, but he said that's the direction it's going
and
based
for him
on the
to
new
say
TV
that
deal.
Means he
that's
probably
a lot.
Thinks 30. You know, like he's not going to over.
Oh yeah, he's talking about the FedEx being 100 million versus 75. So, anyways, you know what? Great field, fun course. I mean, we'll get to it as far as the course is
perfect
concerned.
Perfect risk-reward course.
Yeah, it really is. And having played it and saw how you have to play
Humble
it.
Humble Brad, you played there?
Yeah, a while ago with the PGA Tour player for the last three holes.
God.
But he was something else.
Oh, only anyway, three holes?
Only three. He only came with us for 16, 17, 18. So that was interesting. But, of course, they keep renovating the golf course and it keeps changing. It'll have my interest all weekend long. I'll watch all of it. The tour, as I said, the media guide, I think, is 225 pages. They put everything they put into it. They just go nuts for it, which, again, it's they don't own a major championship. So for them, this is a major to the PGA Tour. And as a result of it, yeah, it's a fun one to watch. And it's got a great list of champions. And there's always seems to be drama. Especially coming down the stretch.
Definitely.
You switched it. You usually say drama, but
drama?
I digress. I've kind of switched my thoughts on the fifth major thought. Last week I said no. What a reputable journalist, if we want to call it.
Flip,
I am that.
Flip,
one
flip.
Week later, I'm flipping.
You're allowed to have opinions.
Yeah, and
course.
I think I just read a lot about it, and I'm kind of, you know, I think I'm going the other way. I would be fine if they decided to switch to the fifth major, and I feel like this topic has come up. And, you know, this doesn't just come up out of nowhere.
Yeah, nothing else
somebody's,
gets tossed in this conversation.
Yeah, somebody's digging. Somebody's sure. digging somewhere because
as there's a Tiger Woods Masters commercial on TV.
Yeah, well, we'll get to Tiger in a moment. But but I almost feel like it's heading that direction. And I think I'm okay with it. I feel like this is actually direction coming from the PGA Tour to get this conversation out there. If they're hinting at this 30 million, do you not, or 25, sorry, Dez thinks 30. But do you not think there's a reason that maybe this is why, that this will actually be announced in the next couple of years as the fifth major?
Well, who gets to declare that? That's the thing,
I think,
right?
It's an interesting concept because, in my opinion, I think the players already feel, mm-hmm. the PGA Tour players already certainly feel like it has the merit.
Well, I think when a guy goes in the Hall of Fame, it's something they touch on, right?
Yeah,
right.
I think that the players is like, I don't, in my personal opinion, I don't think the players needs to be considered a major for me to view it that way.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the players would say the same thing. I think that there are players, money aside, who would rather win a Players Championship than
a PGA.
Than a PGA. Not knocking mm-hmm. the PGA because it's fair. Certainly a major. I think it's the best, as you guys touched on, it's the best field in golf. I think it is on a great golf course where you have to play well and make good decisions. I think that there is a perfect amount of risk-reward holes where a short hitter can succeed. I mean, mm-hmm. didn't Fred Funk win there?
Jim Furyk almost won it last year. Yeah.
So well. I think you see a lot of different types and styles of games succeed there. I don't think, in my opinion, it needs to even be considered a fifth major. I think that the tour does a good enough job creating that atmosphere anyway. But it would be interesting to see if it was.
You do say that about that, like shorter hitters can win there. But it's still a lot of big names that win here. It's not
generally, yes.
Yeah, like yeah. If we just go over the last couple of years, you know, you have Rory McIlroy, Webb Simpson. Webb Simpson
he's
is sneaky,
sure.
unreal. Like, yeah. What a great player. Like, sneaky
doesn't
potentially.
He have 10 wins?
Potentially could get into the Hall of Fame at some point. And I
think with a major, he's already in there.
Another major, watch out. Siwoo Kim kind of came out of left field, but was playing really well that
year.
Jason Day, Ricky Fowler, Martin Kramer, Tiger Woods, Matt Kuchar, KJ Choi, Tim Clark, whatever happened to him. Henrik Stenson, Sergio Garcia.
Long putter.
Phil Mickelson. Like,
damn, yeah.
Do you understand? You get over the last 15 years.
Keep going back. Nicholas won three of these.
Adam Scott, Davis Love, you know, like David Duval.
I think the biggest thing for this and why the discussion was had for a number of years, why people discounted the major talk about it, was because it didn't have the history at that point. But you know what?
Yeah, because it's only like 30 years old, right?
No, we're actually that's actually
1974.
At Sawgrass.
So, it's like
so the thing is, we're now verging on 50 years.
Whoa.
So the thing is that then people can't really argue the lack of history. And as you mentioned, there's a litany of accomplished winners over the years. So the argument becomes stronger and stronger.
Well, it'd be interesting too because I spoke to more about like a professional standpoint of the players and like the PGA Tour players how they view that. But I feel like then now if you want to take it in the fan spectrum of things, like if – what did you say? The players is 50 years old?
74. So,
yeah. 74.
We're close now. Yeah.
I would say that like if you pool the 100 golf fans, Family Feud style,
they wouldn't
you
know
could name more players champions than PGA
Probably.
Champions.
Who do you think the first one is? Do you know it?
What's that?
74.
Nicholas.
He got it. Only guy to win it three times. Yeah. One at the first one. That's perfect.
I said that
three minutes ago. You were probably there.
I said that 3 minutes ago.
I was opening the beer.
Scott looped that week, actually, which it's funny because
he
missed
the cut.
Back
like
then.
Not every 7 under 81.
$50,000.
Yeah,
I saw that.
I was actually calculating
Oh,
up.
Was he? Didn't he jump in the
No,
water
that was Jerry Payton, 81.
With Pete Dye, he had like a thing. Or Pete Dye jumped in or something?
He jumped in and died. Jumped in as well.
And wasn't there crocodile or alligators in there?
No, you're making up stuff.
Okay, true.
I was actually started that when I saw the 50,000 for first prize. I started to calculate how many years early on the total it was to get to the 2.7 million that's going to be handed out this year. And I looked actually at the, I think I tweeted it out actually earlier, the all-time winner. I think Sergio is the all-time money winner, believe it or not.
At the players?
Yeah. Just under $5 million. So, I mean, that's a career right there.
Probably the biggest story coming out this week, though, is Tiger Woods not playing.
Do you think it's the biggest?
It's how – I don't
think
know
for,
how
– I think for
– I think it's a story, but I don't think it's really being emphasized that much.
I feel like if you're, like, a casual golf fan, it's definitely the biggest.
Yeah, probably. And one of the discussions I guess a lot of people are talking about is that, you know, Tiger at this point really is –
He's playing to win majors.
Yeah, he plays to win majors. And he said if he's not feeling 100% and ready to win an event, then he's not going to play. So,
do you think he'll play one over under 0.5 tournaments before the Masters?
What's the schedule after the playoffs?
I don't think we're going to see him until the Masters.
Well, the ones that you would be seeing, like he's not going to the Valspar.
No.
You're looking at the match play.
Masters? Don't they set it up like the Masters? And like, what is that tournament? Remember they like shave it? They like try to make it a Masters prep.
That used to be the Houston Open.
What
but
is it
they moved that now.
So that's not a thing anymore. That the tournament before the Masters is like a.
It's the Valero Texas Open.
Yeah.
It's still that one. But like, if you're going to see him anywhere, it's going to be at the WGC Match Play. and that's in 2 weeks. And if he's not ready for the Players this week because of his back,
he could play Valspar, though. Well, he played Valspar
here's
before.
Here's an interesting thing from a, like, Tiger Woods perspective is, like, if he's concerned about his back not being healthy and he wants reps, Dell Match Play is perfect.
True.
You can mail it in-ish. If you're not feeling good, yeah, it's a match play event.
The only problem is if all of a sudden you end up with 2-a-days, that becomes an issue.
Throw it.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Could happen, too. You're right.
If he wants tournament reps. If he wants tournament reps.
Yeah, he can control.
He could certainly.
Okay, so the question still is, over under 0.5 tournaments before the Masters, are you taking the over or the under?
I mean, I'll feel the need to say again, I don't bet on golf, but if you guys are looking for advice, I would say, even though I'm not educated on the schedule, I would take the over. Leafs just scored a sick Gino.
Yeah, I think I'm with that, too.
Just for, because I won't be editing this, big Leaf fan, as we've talked about here. We got the Leafs game on in studio.
I'm a Dallas Stars fan, but I'm a Calgary fan,
but whatever.
What did I say the Leafs are like? I had a funny joke about the Leafs, because I like to cheer for them. I forget.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So you're taking
Matthew Snipes.
You're taking the over for Tiger playing. Scotty, 0.5.
I'm not personally, but I would say. I think he wants tournament reps. It's a month.
I'm with it. I think he has to play at least one. And it might be Valspar.
And even if he just goes with the intention of he's not trying to miss a cut.
He just wants to hit some balls in tournament.
I know he could play the Masters without playing a tournament.
Valspar isn't far from where he lives, too. Right?
Well, that's the other side of it, right?
I'm going under.
Under?
Yeah. I'm going under. I think he's just avoiding. I don't think it matters. I actually don't even believe the back is an issue. I think it's just an easy way not to get ready for the
I could believe if the back wasn't an issue and he's just realizing that, like, if he manages his body, like, he doesn't even need to be hurt to not play. Because he's like, if I'm trying to win four majors, like, if I'm trying to gain the majors, even if I feel good now, I'm, what, 40?
43.
43. I know I'm not going to feel good in June. So even though I feel fresh now, I'm not going to risk not being
fresh. Actually, 45. What am I thinking?
But whatever it is, you know, I feel like he's managed. Even if I feel like there's a potential he's not even really hurt.
Well, I don't know if he has to be hurt. I think he can just be to the point of sore, right?
Wear and tear from
you guys haven't got to that point yet in your lives, but sometimes your body is not 100% physically.
I'm there. I went for a chiropractor appointment this morning. I go for those often. Quick plug for Joe Reed and Napanee.
Yeah, but you're carrying the bag. It's so much harder to carry it than play. Exactly. Everybody knows that.
You got to carry a bag and a couple beers in your gullet from the night before. It's tough. Okay.
All right.
Especially, you know, hanging out with that Nate guy. But, you know, moving on from Tiger. Yep. Rory McIlroy back to number one. He's back this week trying to defend after winning last year.
No one has ever done.
No one's ever done.
Really?
Fun fact about Rory, he has exactly top 10 and 50% of the events he's played on
it's
the PGA
insane.
Tour.
It's insane.
In his career?
In his career.
Yeah.
He's up. He's 100. I think it was like 70-something to 184.
Yeah, that's unbelievable.
I know this is his 10th players, I believe.
Don't feel like...
Or he's played 10.
And I will admit to this before I got involved in professional golf. I don't feel like listeners of this podcast will understand how good you are playing to top 10.
Oh, it's crazy.
Like... I used to look at professional golf and watch, and you know, they scroll down the leaderboard at the end, and they're like, you know, oh, Rory McIlroy wins 12 under, you know, oh, this guy was in 10th at 8, and here's the guy at even, 45th. It's like, that's still not that far off a good week, and that top 10 stat is insane.
Yeah, I saw that and was just absolutely rattled, but he's looking to defend. Obviously had a rough week last week at the end. He played great.
Yeah, but a lot of guys had a rough.
Absolutely.
It's all relative. I mean, if you look at the scoring average, he wasn't that far off it.
No, not at all. But
and what were his like 10-foot putt stats or something insane? Like he didn't make a putt inside or around 10 feet like the entire last 36
I don't know.
Holes.
I don't. You're pulling stats we haven't even looked at.
Like yeah, true. I didn't get prepared.
I'll
like
be better next time. Stats guy? Can barely read a yard.
Hat-trick appearance in it. It's
exactly.
Nice. It's my
final appearance. But, you know, big week for Rory, obviously. First time notable players in the field this week. Colin Morikawa coming off his win. Matthew Wolf coming off his win last year in the field. Victor Hovland coming off his win in Puerto Rico. You know, what do you expect out of these guys?
That's a
first
huge win. Huge confidence for Victor Hovland.
I believe they're paired together as well. So
that's a sweet
pair. Oh, yeah, they come out with the pairing super early.
Yeah, so that's going to be a good watch.
I worry about Hovland. because with his chipping woes, if you're missing the wrong places at TPC Sawgrass.
He did not play great last week. Morikawa was T9, I believe, last week at Arnold Palmer. So, I mean,
he was in position to potentially win, too.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's obviously playing well. He played it well on a very tough golf course. So I would say, you know, based on that, I would say he's the guy who will probably maybe perform best among the three of them.
That's the best odds in terms of if you're looking at betting wise, at 51-1. I find that low.
Who's that, Morikawa?
Morikawa, yeah.
Well, that'll be a fun group to watch.
If the listeners are invested in betting, something that I feel like is definitely worth it is like top five and top 10. To consider those kind of odds because it's so tough to win.
Yeah, I could see Morikawa in the top 10.
Definitely.
Yeah,
Bryson top 10. Those are some guys. Why don't we get to that? Like, let's all go around the table and we'll give our pick to win and maybe just a dark horse top 10 pick. You don't have to say to win, but just top 10 pick.
Morikawa was among mine, but my guy I'm going to go with is Leishman. Playing great well, pick, lots of confidence, has all the tools to get it done.
Good win player too.
I think there's just a lot of things. He's got some experience there now, which obviously is very important. There's just a lot of combination of factors there that I think he's my guy.
And dark, top 10 dark horse type of pick here.
Ooh, I'm gonna have to go deep for that one. Why don't you guys go and I will give that some thought.
Des, who you got for a win this week?
I like Ricky. I like Ricky to win. Didn't he win here?
15.
Yeah. I just think he putts so good, and I think he rebounds from bad breaks or bad scores very well, and I think that's something at this course you have to do because even though it's a lot of risk reward, there's certainly going to be bad numbers, bad holes, waiting around. Dark horse, I kind of like Kevin Na. I think that when he was going through those yips, he was like in the mix here like 5 or 6 years ago, and I feel like lately he's been playing well the last couple of years. I'm pretty sure he scrambles well. I feel like that's an asset for like if you're hitting it close, you make birdies, but you're not holding your clubs a little tighter if you miss a green because you still have confidence you're going to get up and down. So I'll go with Fowler and Kevin Na to maybe make some noise top 10.
Plus, one of my favorite moments was last year when he scooped that putt out, right? Tiger right after on 17. That was jokes. That's great. My pick for this week is going to be Patrick Cantlay.
Cantlay.
Yeah.
He's been kind of quiet to start the year, but this guy was top 10 every week last year, it felt like. So watch out for him. And then if we're looking at a dark horse top 10, I'm going Max Homa.
Wow, that's such a great pick for the fans. You're probably going to get good value on that.
Yeah, no, I think he's been playing well. Yep. He's coming off a shank last week.
Yeah,
which is
T28 last week. But
no,
still.
I'm just talking about the actual shank that almost hit the camera.
That was hilarious.
And he gets a lot of press from the no laying up guys, and his own podcast. Why am I plugging a competitor's podcast? Two of them, doesn't matter. Max Homa.
Don't listen to those podcasts. Those podcasts are garbage.
Okay, I didn't say it. So I like that. And Phil is getting great odds this week. He has won there before, so watch out for Phil. You never know with Phil.
Right. He's so fun to cheer for.
I've got my dark horse.
Do it.
You ready? Joel Damon.
He was
playing well the last couple weeks.
Played great last week. Qualified for the Open. I think it's bucket hat season.
He's a beauty. That's a good pick. That's a good dark horse pick.
Here's a pick, though, that I'm sure has great odds if you look it up for first round leader. Ryan Moore. Seems like a guy that will be leading after the first round. Is Charlie Hoffman in the field? Because if not, Charlie Hoffman will be leading.
And Charlie Hoffman played well last week, too, so look out.
Watch out for Charlie Hoffman.
True.
I love that. Players Week, we all love it. If you do want to watch every single shot this week, you actually can do that on PGA Tour Live or NBC Live or something along those lines. It is a pay subscription.
It is.
Which I'm fine with.
Are they going to give like a free trial of it or no?
No, because I don't think so. But you got to think about it. They're investing a lot of money into this. It's every single shot from every single player.
Yeah, I mean, that's that's so many cameras.
Yeah. We've been like, these are things like we've talked about.
120 cameras. We know the numbers.
We've talked about this on the podcast many times. Like, that's the dream scenario. Right?
I'm excited to watch.
Is that if you want to go watch Ryan Moore's entire round from start to finish, you can. And yeah. I think if we go back to the betting perspective, that is exactly
it's
why.
The way that it's going to go. But I'm sure they're just trying to test the market to like see before it's even all like in front of you with betting, like
For sure.
So I'm thinking about investing in it just to give a review. I might throw that expense to Flagstick.
I'll split it with you.
Yeah, see if Jeff's okay with that. But either way, I think it'd be it's what I've always wanted of golf coverage. Let's see how it actually goes, and I'm sure we'll get a lot of feedback on it last week. I saw some people on Twitter saying it's weird that they do that, but at the Masters you can watch every shot for free. They don't ask for that payment.
I feel like the Masters is such a like their own entity that like
they have so much money.
Yeah, that they don't need
so much money.
It's true. Feel like this is going to be cool for like fans too, because I feel like a lot of golf fans, through no fault of their own, you see the broadcast and everyone's hitting such amazing shots, and it's like that's not real professional
Absolutely
golf.
Absolutely,
you know. So I feel like it's going to be interesting for them for regular fans
to see. And we've talked about that on the podcast. We're gonna have a drone out there.
Yeah.
Wow.
Who's the first guy that's going to explode on the drone? That's just going to lose his mind.
It's gonna be Hatton, of course.
The drone threw him off.
That's a good call. Where are we going with drone explosion odds?
I got Bryson on this, and
I got John Rahm on this.
I got Bryson because he's going to say that the drone in the sky moves the
airflow contours, and thus the flow in his hair was inconsistent with how he really felt the Epsom salts would affect his ball.
Exactly, something along those lines. So, I thought about that earlier when you mentioned the drone. So, something interesting.
That should be good.
Something interesting.
Cool note before we get away from the Players Championship: 110 players in this field have won on the PGA Tour.
110 players.
Yeah, there's 144 in the field. 110 of them have won on the PGA Tour. How's that for a stacked field?
That's insane.
That is stacked. That is why it's the fifth major.
It is the Players.
Is why it's the fifth major.
Play is play.
Why don't we take another quick break? Because then we're going to come back. We're going to do birdie versus bogey, or birdie or bogey. We kind of got to figure out the title. I think we switch it each week. We're going to answer the mailbag. We're going to hit a tip from the coach, and then we're going to wrap it up with a tip from the pro caddy.
Wow. Let's do it.
I'm a fool.
All right, well, back before we get to our other segments, just want to mention one thing. At Flagstick, we're involved with the Kevin Haim Kids of the Course Classic, and we're providing an opportunity for junior golfers to have a chance to go to an exclusive clinic with Brooke Henderson. She's going to be doing this at May 5th in Ottawa. It's a junior clinic that's sponsored by Ping Canada, and juniors can basically go to flagstick.com/golden ticket if they want to apply. They got to register by April 30th, and they'll be notified after that, but it's a great opportunity. It's basically Brooke's only appearance in Canada for Ping this year, and she likes to get back to junior
great
golf.
Great event every year.
Really is. And she puts on a good show. Brittany, her caddy, is there as well. Spend some time with the kids. Sign some autographs, usually has a little bit of swag for them, gets pictures with them. And certainly if juniors want to apply to that, they just put in their application, and then they'll be picked and they'll be notified beforehand. They just have to register, like I said, by April 30th, and just go to www.flagstick.com/golden ticket.
I love it. All right, birdie or bogey. So this is a game we've come up with where we're going to give something that's happening in the world of golf. You're going to give it a birdie if you like it, or you're going to give it a bogey if you dislike it.
Just a snap answer or kind of?
No, you're going to give your why on either side. You can have one eagle throughout the whole time, and you can have one triple bogey. You don't get doubles. They're just triples. If you really want to go far.
Oh, wow.
Do you understand the rules?
I comprehend.
I like it. All right. So the first one, Paige Sporanek is in the news. She's made some comments about the golf culture, basically saying it's a boys club that is elitist, stuffy, and exclusive. I'll read the quote here. They call it a gentleman's game, but those guys definitely don't act like gentlemen a lot of the time. There's so much hypocrisy in golf, and it's so frustrating to me. It's this big boys club where if someone does something, they'll cover that up. But I wear a tank top, and I can't go into the other words she says here, but she basically says she feels she's told she's the one ruining the game. So Paige Sporanek comments on the golf being elitist and stuffy. Is that a birdie or bogey for you?
I'll tread lightly here.
Please do.
And I'll make it quick. I don't have any personal vendettas with anyone or anything like that. I'll just say it's a bogey. I'll keep it simple. I just don't think you bite the hand that feeds you. There could be some validity that golf is an elitist club, but I think that if you're going to get famous, I'll just say posting what you post, I don't think that you can go ahead and then say the backlash of what you post can be ridiculed. I think that you have to live with that. I'm sure there are points that she had made that are valid, but I'll say that's a bogey in my opinion.
You go. Go ahead.
You want me to go?
Yeah, why don't you go?
I'm pretty much aligned there too. I mean, here's the thing. I mean, certainly many, many sports have an old boys club. It's that way in a lot of different things. And certainly there's always problems to be fixed. There really have to be. As far as how she approached it, I mean, first of all, I'm not that concerned about, you know, who she is, what she does or whatever. But as Dez said, you know, if you come out and do things in certain ways, there's going to be certain reactions to it. And it's not that they're valid. Some of those reactions are valid or invalid. I'm not validating any of them. But certainly as far as the game is concerned, I mean, yeah. Is she ruining the game? No, I mean, she's not ruining the game, but you've got to understand that, you know, if you want to be treated legitimately in any type of profession, you have to act certain ways and do certain things. And, you know, rules are rules. There's always going to be some rules, and that's just the way it is.
I do like your comment on don't bite the hand that feeds you there. I agree with that. I'm going to give her a birdie just in the sense of she kind of goes on about, you know, we've talked about this a lot on the podcast, just the stuffiness of what you have to wear on a golf course.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, who cares if you're wearing a polo or a t-shirt?
Sure.
And who cares if the guys wear shorts?
Yeah, I agree with that.
I actually agree that golf can be stuffy. I think she's barking up the wrong tree.
Yeah, I think
on certain aspects, especially the aspect of, like, I'm the one ruining the game. Like, you know, you're making something.
The reality is the people who are paying attention to her are not influential enough to have her post hanging the balance of the game being ruined.
Well, I think the problem is here too. You're mixing a lot of different issues. It's not black and white, and
yes,
trying to say that all of a sudden, you know, people are treating her one way because of something. It doesn't necessarily have to do with that. There's a lot of, it's complicated. It really is.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, yes, there's stuffiness. There's definitely some things that have to change in the game, but you also have to understand you're going to be respected for how you go about doing things. So just be as professional as possible and away you go.
I'll also give her a birdie in the sense of she's saying that she's being pushed out of golf and in all this sense, and she's still just attacking golf in that sense. So, like, give
it's
her some credit.
Yeah.
Give her some credit for, you know, going down swinging in a sense. But I don't think we need to dive too far.
Yeah, let's
get
to the next birdie or bogey.
But, yeah, so there's where our heads are.
I mean, you know what? She's honest of what she's – if she's honest about how she's taking her things, well, then she's the only one that has to live with that.
Absolutely. Exactly. Birdie or bogey, golf ball brands putting pro logos or names on the ball. And this came from Bridgestone just recently released a ball that literally is Tiger's ball.
Yep.
And it has Tiger on the side. TaylorMade in the past have done, you know, the Rory ball or the Justin Rose ball. And,
sure. You
know, every brand's done something along those lines. Are you giving this a birdie or bogey?
Birdie by me. It's fine. I mean, fans, collectors, whatever, they're going to go and buy it. You know, manufacturers are paying money to these athletes for their endorsement. That's part of what they do. If someone wants to buy it and play it because they're a big Tiger fan, you know, that's up to them. I might not do it, but that's fine. It's fine by me, so I'll give it a birdie.
I feel like I'll give it a net birdie. I feel like is that a thing? Did I make a new category?
That's new.
Net birdie. I like it. I'm allowing it.
I'll go.
I am allowing it.
I'll go host. Net birdie. I feel like, because you said sports teams too, right?
Not sports teams. They are. We.
I saw TaylorMade today.
Scott released that sports teams will be out.
Newsbreaker.
But this is. Well, we're gonna get sued for that. this is for strictly just pros names on the side of the golf.
If it's just pros names, then. Like, this is the thing where it's like, I agree with what Scott said. If you're a huge fan of someone, then I think it's very cool that you can go and purchase them like that. But for me personally, I'll say it's a bogey then for me, because if I see a ball that says Tiger and it's Bridgestone, I'm like, oh my God, that's a ball he used. Because, I went to a PGA Tour event 10 years ago and got a ball, and I was like, this is the sickest thing ever. So just to be chintzy, I'll say I think it's a bogey, but I think the sports teams thing is very cool.
Yeah, I agree that it is a bogey. Scott's posting a photo of this ball to us right now, and I'm with you. I don't want a ball that says somebody else's name on it.
But I'm also not going to chirp someone if they do, but I personally
If you and I were playing, I would be chirping you for using the ball.
Yeah, that's true.
But Scott, as Scott said, if a kid is using this ball, that's cool.
From a
retail perspective, it's a birdie. From an actual, from my perspective, whatever I do, it's a bogey.
Yeah.
Brooks Koepka, I mentioned earlier I got something to say, so I'm sure you'll know exactly where I'm going, but I'm going last on here. But Brooks Koepka is playing with Rory this week in a press conference. They were asking Brooks just about playing with Rory. He said, I have enough friends. I don't even have Rory's number. not just that comment, but are you giving Brooks a birdie or bogey on his overall attitude lately in terms of golf?
That's his attitude. I don't really. It's not up to me. It's like somebody asking me for medical advice. I'm not a doctor. So
you got to pick.
It's fine. It's a birdie. It's a birdie by me. I'm not concerned about it. If that's the way that you go about doing your business, he's a professional golfer. He's not out there to make friends. If that's the way he wants to go about it, keep himself isolated, just do his thing. Then that's fine. It may not be kosher with all the fans that want him to be warm and fuzzy and be the guy, but that's just the way he's doing it. And so far, so good as far as winning four majors.
I'll go. I don't know necessarily the short term comments he's been making, but I feel like maybe the last 3 or 4 years, I've paid attention to what he says. And in that regard, of the last 3 or 4 years, maybe not as recently, I'll go birdie. I think it's cool that Brooks is who he wants to be. I think it's cool. His game, obviously. In large spurts speaks to that we can't be chirping him, because as Scott said, he's won so many majors. I'll say it's a birdie. I think it's cool that he owns who he is. I think it's cool that he's not fake. Maybe sometimes he can be a little arrogant, but when you win more than when you win 4 or 5 majors, I feel like you can do whatever you want.
See, that's where I actually disagree with you. I think he is fake. I think it's all just a big I don't care about anything.
Based on what?
Nonsense.
Trying to intimidate the other players or trying to intimidate the media?
No, I think the media, I think it's gone too far. And if we go back to don't bite the hand that feeds you comments, he acts like golf isn't important to him, blah, 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 blah.
I'll give you that.
Time to move on, Brooks. I'll give you this comment. I'll give you a birdie on this comment if it comes off a PGA championship like you did last year. I'm giving you a bogey on this comment when it comes off of a 81 on the weekend. Okay. And I get it was hard, but Brooks hasn't done nothing in the last couple weeks. You said he's hurt.
He's been hurt.
Sure, sure.
Just came back from a knee injury.
Sure, whatever. I still, other guys, when they're hurt, I think they're aware that they're hurt. They're not playing their best, that you're going to get ridiculed for that. Time and place for your comments.
So you kind of want to see his ego reflect his game a little bit.
Absolutely. If you're playing well, be as egotistic as you want. Be like, yeah, I'm going to go out there and beat you. But right now, if there's a bet where I can say Brooks is going to miss the cut this weekend, I'm taking that, because he's just not playing well, and it's just not the time. So I think Brooks needs to look himself in the mirror a little bit right now and realize where his game's at and stop acting like he doesn't care about it. He said at some point that $200 million wouldn't change his life.
Oh,
did you hear that comment recently?
Sure, comment, but only he knows the answer to that. We don't.
I mean, what's he got to be worth? He's got to be worth more than 100. Not to say that, a nice little 200 mil bump wouldn't change things.
Yeah, 200 million changes a billionaire's life. He's not a billionaire. Yeah. So I don't know. I'm over Brooks' stuff. Brooks, if you do need a caddy, I will come out there. I digress. Birdie or bogey, the current tickets for the RBC Canadian Open for Friday and Saturday. Those are the days with the concerts, which we talked about last week, yep. which are Keith Urban and the Chainsmokers.
Wow.
Are currently at $104.30 with taxes and fees. Sunday's ticket is at $110.95 with taxes and fees. Are you giving this a birdie or bogey?
So when is the concert dates?
Friday, Saturday. Chainsmokers, Saturday.
Okay,
is
so
Keith
each Urban. Individual daily ticket's 100.
Yes.
I mean, I'll give that a birdie. I feel like I'm a little bit more familiar with Keith Urban than Chainsmokers, but I feel like if I'm a fan of those bands, I probably am paying that to get to a concert anyways.
Oh, absolutely.
And, sure.
and it's a general admission.
I'll give that a birdie for sure. I feel like that's well priced.
But not everybody's going to the concert.
Correct. So you're saying, yeah. I'll still give it a birdie because I feel like it's well marketed to get big bands, and I feel like that only gets more recognition for the tournament, so I'll give it a birdie.
Okay, that said then, Sunday, where there's no concert,
yeah.
you're now up to $110.95 for the day.
For just the daily.
For a daily ticket, the RBC Canadian Open. Now you can double that and get a weekly pass or whatever. Is that still good value? I mean, what's the threshold for good value for a single
I feel like an interesting question would be to ask if Rory doesn't win last year, what's the price of the ticket?
And that's where I was going to go. And I was going to say.
It's only bumped up a little bit this year. No. And I mean, it's in line with what the players is. But, you know, are we talking about should it?
It's certainly not the stature of the players, obviously. But I feel like it's a national open. And I mm-hmm. feel like Canada always gets a dope turnout. And I feel like, I don't know. I feel sympathy for the fans who are like, this is too much. And I'm upset that it costs this much. But but I'll give it a birdie. I think it's I think it's perfectly price pointed for sure.
I'm going to go with the birdie. And as I said, that's where I was going. Last year was so perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And that this field this year, I'm going to guarantee is one of the strongest fields you've ever had. It's in Toronto, right in the heart of the city. That alone is bringing up price.
Yeah.
That alone, right? Like you're bringing a lot of people from, people are going to be flying all over the country, you know, assuming Corona is all fixed by then. Mm-hmm. But all over the country, all over North America to come see this. You're going to have, as I said, one of the strongest fields. Those are two very big artists, whether you love them or not. To see Keith Urban alone for $105,
$110,
which I get, but
I'm not arguing.
Is
one
the
way
concert
or the other.
In the like it's gonna, is it it's, a separate venue?
It's going to be at Richview Collegiate.
So
five,
you could
five
like,
minutes up
I mean,
road.
You're certainly going to get people who are like putting ads on Kijiji, like, hey, don't want to go to golf, but if you don't want to go,
oh,
to
oh, they're
concert.
Already on StubHub for
yeah. But I mean, like the tickets are going to get exchanged from like, hey, I'm in golf, sure. I'm not in the concert. I'm in, yeah,
yeah, possibly. I'll still give it a birdie. I think from a value standpoint, I mean, this topic is really only in there because I talked to a few different people and some had some hesitations as far as the price. I mean, realistically, you're there all day. I mean,
it could be 12 hours of entertainment.
Right.
Yeah, people exactly. Spend, you break it down, it's
think,
$8 an
think
hour.
About what like, you pay for a movie exactly. for entertainment now. And you go to a movie, you've got the top people in the world on a screen. This, you have the top athletes
in
the world
face.
In their sport.
You can hear the sound when they hit it.
Exactly,
yeah.
100%. So I think it's justified. It might not be justified for everybody, but again.
Which I do agree with.
Yeah, and Monday to Wednesday, it's still $32.50. So
I feel like
if
the price point's an issue for you, you can still go and see. Then I think it's a birdie.
And they still offer some value for some junior pricing and stuff like that. So birdie for me as well.
Yeah.
Cool. Next birdie or bogey, the possibility of appearance money on the PGA Tour in the future.
Yeah, there was the discussion today. Jay Monahan was doing his State of the Union, basically, for the PGA Tour. Spoke for about an hour at the media center. And they brought up, somebody brought that topic up. He said he wasn't going to dismiss it. He obviously didn't commit to it and say it's something that they would allow. Which, if people are not familiar, there's no appearance fees allowed on the PGA Tour. And when I say that, appearance fees, I mean official appearance fees. Certainly, there are sponsors that do things for athletes that help get them to tournaments.
Of course.
But
just talked about one, probably.
Exactly. if we're looking at this new money coming into the tour in 2022, we're seeing the possibility of larger purses. We're seeing the possibility of, you know, competition with different golf leagues and stuff like this. What are your thoughts? Do you think it would be a birdie or a bogey for this to happen on the tour?
I don't know. I feel like
it's a big topic.
Yeah, I feel like from a general fan perspective, like I don't know if I would really care or I, it would make me watch more if I knew or didn't know if a person was getting paid $1 million or $1.5 million to be in a certain event.
Can you imagine what the tickets would be at the Canadian Open if Tiger was getting $1 million to show up?
That's the whole thing, too. It's like if you want to look at it as like a business model standpoint, like if you're going to pay someone that amount of money, obviously you're probably pretty certain you're going to see a return. I think from a fan standpoint, I mean, I feel like it's just like a par. Like, I feel like I'm pretty indifferent to it. Is that not allowed?
No par.
I feel like, what's the question? If you allow it?
No, birdie or bogey. Are you giving, if they do allow it, are you giving it a birdie or a bogey?
I'm giving it, I mean, I'll give it a birdie just because I don't think it changes anything.
That's fair.
Yeah.
I'm giving it a bogey just on the standpoint of certain players. Like, those. I'm thinking of those guys on the outskirts that, you know, these are the events that, you know, the guy that's, you know, very limited status out on the PGA Tour. That, you know, this is an event, like, I'm not downplaying the Valspar next week, but let's say the Valspar next week, right, that they're in it, and now they're bumped because Valspar paid, you know, Dustin Johnson to show up for $500,000. And I think let the status be the status. You show up to the event, money, you know, if they want to pay you as sponsors through an actual sponsors thing outside of it, I think that's different. I don't personally love it. It just screams, you know.
For me, I feel like the good examples are like the Tony Romo or like the Steph Curry tournaments that they're playing. Like, if these tournaments are throwing out that much money for a Dustin Johnson to be there, I think the reality is that the tournaments aren't that popular anyways. And I feel like more people are going to watch when a Dustin Johnson plays, or even me, for instance. Like, obviously it's part of my job to like keep an eye on the Corn Ferry or like, you know, potentially go to the PGA, but it's like, I'm going to watch maybe if it's 20 minutes or 30 minutes or 2 hours of Steph Curry playing on the Corn Ferry, where I probably won't watch an event the rest of the year.
Yeah. I think this is different though, when we're talking about guys at the highest level.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I mean, you know, it's maybe I'm thinking the wrong spot. I actually like your argument originally. That means I hated that one. I actually liked your argument originally around the, you know, the idea of the fan's perspective. So if we're doing it that way, yeah, it's a birdie. But in terms of, I'm thinking I thought players first when I first thought of it, so I'm going bogey.
Me too. I'm just going to leave it a bogey for now. I mean, I think the system that's in place works. They've got their ways that people get in the tournaments. Yes, their sponsors doing end rounds, but, you know, that's the way it is. There's no need to really convolute that anymore and really change the landscape the way it is. So we'll just, without getting too deep into it, I'll just give it a clean bogey.
All right, last one before we hit the mailbag. I will be surprised if this isn't a clean sweep. I've been noticing on the PGA Tour, white belts have just started showing up more and more. So white belts.
Triple bogey.
Are we giving them?
You were saving the triple bogey.
I don't even need to say anything. Are they a birdie or a bogey? We have one triple bogey from Scotty.
He doesn't even look like he wants to explain. Triple bogey.
There's nothing else
explains.
I want to say. I literally, no thanks.
I'll go a scramble. I'll say it's a birdie if you're getting paid for it, and it's a bogey if you're not.
Oh,
whatever.
Oh, I started so hot and birdie to bogey with the net birdie, and now I'm just chumming.
Yeah, now you're just trying to you've gone too far trying to make stuff up.
Getting splinters in my butt. Put me on the bench.
I'm giving it a bogey, especially the ones I've seen. It's not been a guy wearing a white shirt or a white pants.
No.
It's like a black shirt with blue pants.
Cutting the guy in half.
It's awful.
Like Penn and Teller or something.
Yeah.
If you're wearing – I've said this like 5 times on this podcast – if you're wearing a white belt, you have to be wearing a white shirt or white pants. More specifically, probably just the white pants.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you're wearing white pants anyway, you probably have other issues you want to be worrying about, like a nice, good pair of underwear. But I'm going to leave it at that with a bogey. It's time to hit the mailbag. We had a full mailbag this week. Scotty's going to read off the questions. We're going to give our answers. And we actually have one directly to Dez at some point, so we'll get to that at some point here. So, Scotty, hit it.
All right. First question in the mailbag this week. How do you think golf can be more accessible? Well, that's a small one.
Yeah, so this question actually came to me in my DMs.
Somebody hit you up.
Yeah, and the idea wasn't necessarily, you know, money-wise, but just, you know, in general. Like, how can we get more people viewing it, more people potentially playing it? Mm-hmm. Just, I guess, to go, you know, Paige Spiranek route, like, just make it less stuffy and just more fun in a little bit of ways.
I think the biggest thing for accessibility is more about awareness. There's a lot of people now that are not aware of certain sports. And I'll take it the other way as well. I mean, we're talking about golf. There's lots of other sports that are being played in this country that we're not really familiar with and you don't have much involvement with. So I think it all comes down to accessibility. I think it comes down to promotion at the youngest level possible to make people be interested in the game. They're generally not going to develop a lot of new interest later on in their lives. So I think it really comes down to continuing the programs, the Golf in the Schools programs, any other junior related programs, community based programs at, you know, smaller courses, things that are affordable, things that are well publicized, and where there's a lot of effort done to reach out into groups that normally don't are not involved in golf, whether it's, you know, a different community group, just kids that are maybe, you know, not around the game and don't have it as part of their life.
I think for me, it's just different golf courses. They, you know, think about going to a golf course and standing at the first tee and not really being able to hit it more than 150 yards.
It's intimidating.
So intimidating. Yeah. Even if you go up to as forward as the forward tees go or even start teeing it off in the fairway, still very intimidating. More pitch and putts, more par three courses, more short courses, more fun.
Just like driving range activity, I feel like, is where you get started. Like, I feel like if you can just go out on a driving range.
Top Golf, you probably go to Top Golf anytime you can when you're out on tour.
I just think like getting out and hitting golf shots and not necessarily like losing 10 balls in the first 9 holes if you're not, you know, if you're new to golf. I just think like getting out and just hitting golf shots, whether it's in your backyard or something, I feel like that's good.
I don't know if you caught this. Alan Bastable from golf.com had a great column.
You want to drink a water there?
Yeah, I don't know what happened there. related to this, he went out skiing with his kids, and he thought about it and said, you know, a lot of people are jumping onto the double black diamonds and they throw their kids out there. They throw everybody and they go to that. He's like, we need more bunny hills. We need more exactly what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
We need more green courses which are, you know, green level, more situations that are really not intimidating at all, really easy to play. And he's right. It's not something that's not been said, but it's true. It's getting people away from the habits of going out and playing 65, 67, 6,800 yards when really, you know what, even good players can go and enjoy 6,000, but play 4,000.
I was going to say,
go way far forward and just enjoy the game. And we talk about it lots. If you make too many birdies, then, you know, then you move back. But, the emphasis,
or at these short courses, you make too many birdies, get rid of 5 clubs in your bag.
Yeah, I think the emphasis just has to be on, we have to get away from the ego of the game and even in the marketing that everything has to be championship and 7,000 yards and get back to realize that, you know, just fun. And it can be 50-yard holes and it can still be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's just not realistic. Like, it's not like if I was trying to get into basketball, I'd go try to dunk it or something. I 100%. Totally agree. It's like you got to, like, give people a realistic chance to enjoy it. And it's like I was saying, if you just go to the range and I hit a bucket of balls and I hit one good, I'm going to fall more in love with golf than if I went and played golf and shot 150 and hit a great shot on my second last hole.
Think about this. If I put you out on a putting green and it was your first experience playing golf and the putt that you had to make was a 50-footer, how fast would you want to quit this game?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think you need to make people slowly fall in love with it. I agree.
Cool. What's the next in the mailbag?
All right. What was the hole that you played worst that you remember? Highest score, maybe, et cetera. What lessons did you learn from that? Oh, boy.
So this this story.
How'd this one show up?
Another DM. All right. This story, every time I think about it, I've told it on the podcast, and it's one.
Oh, I know
where
this
I
one.
Learned a very drastic lesson. And this is a quick plug for the Flagstick Open, which if you haven't signed up for the Flagstick Flagstick Open, head to flagstickopen.com, May 2-4 weekend.
I might get to play if Corona
keeps
us out.
Could have Ryan. It'd
be great to have you back
in
the field.
Can I get a sponsor's invite?
We'll talk
about that. I would like a sponsor's invite, but I digress. So Flagstick Open about, I'm going to say 5 years ago now. First tee at Equinel Golf Club. A lot of water. Intimidating tee shot.
A little bit.
So I hit what I think is a good drive, and the starter, who will remain nameless, says, yep, right over there, just in the bunker, maybe.
That was me.
Yeah, so I get over there. Ball's not in the bunker. Couldn't find it anywhere. Didn't see a splash at all, right? So we're going back to the tee. And I just rushed back to the tee. The guy that there's a caddy in our group. And he says, just grab your driver. And it's cool. The caddy tells me to grab a driver. I'm just going to grab a driver. So there's obviously a drop zone. I only have a driver. I decide to tee it up in the drop zone. Yeah, didn't drop it. I teed it right up in the drop zone. No one, there was everyone at the
tournament. Did your tournament last one hole?
So I tee it up in the drop zone, hit my drive, go on, make what I think is a double, not thinking that I just teed it up in the word drop zone.
Yeah.
Co-host from a few weeks ago, Rich, comes up. He's just red in the face, head to toe, and he's laughing. He's like, what's that area called that you just put your ball in? And I said, oh, the drop zone. He's like, why didn't you drop it in there?
And
I said, oh, he's like, just put two strokes on there and move on. Yeah. So I probably could have been DQ'd first hole.
Figured you were not a serious threat to win the event. So he wanted you to enjoy
it. Yeah. So, but I did learn very quickly in that. But that is easily the worst hole that I remember, obviously, that sticks out to me anytime I think of that.
I had to really think about this one. I've got a lot more scar tissue to dig through than maybe you guys. But
another 35 years or so.
I can remember playing in a professional event where I got to the tee box and literally I thought, oh, are they going to call it off? Because it was raining so hard that I couldn't see. And we were hoping that water was going to pool enough on the green on the short par four that they might get us out of there. But lo and behold, I had to hit the tee shot. And literally because it was raining so hard and I knew I hit the shot so bad, I had no idea where the golf ball went. Like, absolutely no idea.
Could have went left, could have went right, could have been behind.
I had no idea. And I just like turned to the other guys like, did you guys see that? And they're like, nope, we didn't see it all. So, hit a provisional, which I thought was in a decent spot, and went searching for the ball and didn't find the first one and didn't find the second one. Oh, so go back to the tee.
Number five.
The bad part was, it was only the second hole of the tournament. I was five off the tee, and it was.
What was the number after?
I'm trying to think. 5, 6, 7, 8. I think a little niner on the card on that one. So,
Ricky Fowler.
Yeah. So now I did play with a guy the week prior to that I watched hit five balls in a row off a tee and on a par five, and he was determined he was just going to get over it. And the funny part was, it was a qualifying tournament, and he had no chance after he made his 14. But he
made it.
He slugged it out. I'll give him credit. He stuck it out, did the whole thing or whatever. But you know what? In the
that's
end,
that's a net birdie right there.
Yeah.
Guys can have the net birdie.
In the end, you know, you make the number, you put it on the card, and you know, while you don't have a trophy out of it, you end up with a story.
I was playing. Is it Black Bear Ridge or? Yeah, Black Bear is 10, a big dogleg right to left, down super downhill.
Slight.
Okay, yeah.
You're thinking of Trillium. Thinking of Trillium, the big dogleg.
Yeah, so Black Bear is the one I'm thinking of, I think. We had an Ontario AM qualifier there. I must have been 18 or 19, and all the boys were in the morning, like Simon Ryers and Brad Boyle, Fabro, Benford. And I'm in the afternoon, so I'm coming through 9, and 9's the hard par 3. Am I thinking of the correct course?
Correct.
Yeah, okay. Yep. So I make a par on par 3. Yeah, so I make a par on 9 to be like 5 deep through 9. And I'm like, and I think I'd only played one Ontario AM, and I'm like, nice. Like, I'm playing sick. And so Boyle finishes on 18, and I'm just like, what's up, dude? Like, you know, maybe see you later. Like, how'd you play? And he's like, oh, I shot 2 under. Like, I just signed my card. Like, it's definitely good enough. And I was like, oh, unreal. He's like, how are you playing? I was like, I'm 5 under. You know, he's like, sick. So I'm like, I go into the clubhouse and I'm like, hey, can I get a hot dog? And can I also get a frame made for the course record? and I proceed to like get to 10T, and I like hit it pretty far.
They should sell those at the halfway house, right? Not at the end. Like, they should sell like, just at the halfway house.
I'm 5 deep, paint my parking spot, and get me the course record. So I get to 10. And back in the day, I smashed it pretty good. So I probably can hit, I don't know, driver like 310 in the air. And I get on the tee and I'm like, oh man, I'm going to pump a driver over these trees and I'm going to be close to the green and make another birdie. And right before I'm like about to hit driver, and this was probably coincidentally the start of when I started making horrible caddy decisions, I'm like, no, I'm just going to hit a 3-wood and put it in play. And like, I'm going to, you know, just shoot even or something on the back, and all I need is a couple under. And I ripped 3 balls left woods. Yo. So 1, 3, 5. I was 7 off a D and made it 10.
Ugh.
Ended up shooting like 3 over total, 8 over on the back. And
quick 5 under to 1 over.
Yeah.
That's quick. Tough. That's quick. Real quick.
And then obviously the insult to injury was on the – I come around to like 17 and like, Mr. DeVoe, your frame's here. And I'm like, come on, get out of here. Frame me out.
Frame
here.
For the highest score
that
on
was,
10.
That was
– 10 on 10. Nice.
Yeah.
That's amazing. All right, next one here. This is for you, Dez.
Uh-oh.
Probably came in from somebody you know. You tweeted at us. What would you do with the money when you win your first event?
Huh. That's interesting. I mean, I guess let's say it's like a like an average tier, maybe. Let's say it's like a women's major. Let's say it's like 50 grand US. I mean, I would definitely just like – I would definitely just put like – this is a boring answer. Put like 40 or 45 away. It's pretty customary on tour where like if you win a big event, you're going to take the boys out for beers the next day. And maybe –
that could be 10K right there.
Yeah, definitely. No, you cap it at 1,000. You go to the bar and you say once it's done, it's on them. But as much as the remaining 5,000 might not be a popular answer, I would definitely I would definitely fly 5 or 10 boys out to come to the next event or an event in the near future to soak in some of the after effects of the party and probably do something like that.
So the follow-up is Jay McCalls wants to know, would you fly your buddies down to celebrate chugging style or just enjoy crispy claws alone?
Jay McCalls, I mean, well, if you're looking for the immediate answer, I would definitely enjoy a couple crispy claws on my own.
All right, you can deal with that.
I mean, I do think like
I'd fly the boys down for sure. I think I would. On miles though, I'd save the money.
Just to touch on it, like you've been grinding it out for a few years, so I think you're saying I would like those crispy claws on your own just to sit there and reflect. And you're gonna get your win. I know it's you probably expected it sooner
enough,
than later, but
not that this is to be frowned upon, because it definitely was like a springboard for my career. The first event I considered I ever worked professionally, I won. I caddied for Augusta James, and we won a tournament in Florida. So I was just like, this is extremely easy, and like I'm going to start to like win all the time, and I haven't won in 5 years. I've had 5 or 6 seconds, but so it was kind of funny that it worked out that the first event that I won.
You got
to
win.
They're not that easy to win.
All right, couple more here. Well, one more here. What is your go-to meal at a golf course? That's what we got to ask that one. I thought that was kind of interesting. I mean, not like every golf course has the same menu, but a lot of golf courses have a lot of similar things.
I'm going to answer what isn't for Dez. It's a hot dog at the turn now.
apparently, and a frame.
Yeah. And a frame.
Okay.
I think my go-to, I try not to actually eat during a round. I try to eat prior and just like a snack, but if I'm grabbing something, you know, just a, you know, a sausage at the turn, sausage, mustard,
like afterwards,
horseradish.
If they have horseradish, absolutely.
Big horseradish
if they got banana
big.
Peppers afterwards, you know, what's on special this week, let's see what's on special. But during, I'm thinking this question was during a round, so I'm a big sausage over a hot dog guy.
Yeah, I'm down with that as well. Sausage over a plain hot dog. I think I'm just tired of the old hot dogs. But afterwards, I'm kind of a clubhouse thing. I don't know why.
I'm more of a liquid dinner after around.
I don't know. I got in this habit a few years ago, and I almost thought about it for a while, of doing a story on it of the best clubhouses at the
clubhouse.
That'd be a cool little deal.
Yeah,
you should start another podcast about that. Oh,
but then they'd be a rival of this one, wouldn't they?
Yeah, probably.
I don't think anybody's.
So you're a clubhouse sandwich and a sausage. What about you, Dez?
I'm the same as you. I mean, I feel like on the course, I'm not really eating that much. I ate a lot before, but on course food, I'd probably just say a Caesar.
So like, what about
Mott's Clamato Caesar? Mott's Clamato.
So let's go before. What's your go-to prior to a round?
I mean, if we have an afternoon tea time, typically, I like Panera Bread a lot. I just like chicken salad or something. Like,
more,
it's kind of weak, but it's like a little protein and also a little green. Ooh. So evens it out.
I like to play early. Once you get married, you got to get out before they're awake usually on my weekends. So I'm give me a bacon, bacon, egg, Sandy.
Oh, yeah. Yes. And that's even good for lunch or dinner. Yeah, that's not true. That's not beat around
you
the bush.
You know what? On that same vein, bacon roll. Yeah. When you're over in the UK, you get a bacon roll with just bacon on
and
a bun.
And it feels cooler because it's called a bacon roll. You're exactly. just like, dude, this is just two pieces of like Dempster's bread with like one slice of bacon. But like they're like, it's a bacon roll. And you're like, oh, my God, $15 for sure.
My wife is, my wife's very British, and she loves the bacon sandwiches. And it's just Dempsters with bacon.
Yeah, 100%.
Such a weirdo. That's it for the mailbag, I believe. So why don't we hit up the tip of the week? Who wants to go first? Because we're going to go with a caddy tip of the week, and then we're going to go with the pro tip of the week. Dez, you're throwing your hand in there. You want to go first?
I was fixing my hair.
Let's let Dez
wrap
it
up.
Yeah,
okay,
for sure. I'll see
what the vibe of the tip is, and then I'll try and
Scotty's going to give you from the coach's perspective.
All right, I'll go
PGA
more strategy
professional.
Or something.
You can go from whether it's strategy, but caddy perspective,
cool.
mental prior to the
Give
game.
Give me some time to think about it.
Give you a moment. Scotty,
All right.
coach, let's hear it.
All right. You were talking about hitting it a long way. A lot of people are worried about this these days. A lot of emphasis on it. I see lots of people on social media talking about working with overspeed training systems, doing different things fitness related. But just a quick reminder that club head speed gives you the potential to hit the ball longer. But in order to get ball speed, you need to do other things as well, which means having quality contact. You got to get that club head moving in the right direction and have a great amount of, the right amount of spin. The launch conditions have to be right as well. So it's not always about club head speed. So that's really the tip of the day, is to really focus on not just club head speed as well. You know, go see a professional, go through a fitting, and get on a launch monitor and see what the other conditions that are happening as well. You've got to have solid contact. There's a lot of things that have to happen for you to maximize distance. And it's not necessarily just speed alone. There's a lot of people that can swing the club very fast, but don't really get a lot of distance out of it. And sometimes you can have not as much speed, but you optimize your conditions and you get a lot more out of it.
I like it. You kind of got both aspects. You as the coach, me as the 2014 Fitter of the Year in there. I don't bring that up often, but when I do, it makes sense. So thank you, Scotty, for your tip. All right, caddy tip of the week. What do we got, Dez?
I would say, I feel like a lot of times amateurs, when we meet up with them in pro-ams, they're all talking about like they don't want to shoot above their head and shoot under par, but they're like, why can't I like shoot better scores? I would say the big thing with obviously golf season coming up, if you're someone in the range of like a 10 to a 25 handicap, I would recommend maybe going out and playing the first couple rounds if you are concerned and want to score better. If you don't have that much pride, play the first 9 holes or the first 18 holes of your season and legitimately go for the center of the green and don't look at the pin. I think a lot of time when amateurs get into trouble is picking an incorrect target and having incorrect execution. The reality is a lot of the courses around here, the greens are going to be 25, 35, 40 yards wide. So if you really, truly were disciplined enough to even just for the first 9 holes of your season, just kind of go out and see where if you truly aimed in the middle of the pin, you're going to hit pulls to left pins that are 5 feet, and you're going to hit pushes to left pins that are 50 feet. But I can definitely assure you, you're going to have a better score on the card putting saving par than chipping. So I would say that'd be a fun thing to try.
I agree. I actually read a great article. I can't find it. It's a long time ago, or really around that, just the idea of this superintendent one day took out all the pins on the golf course, and it just made the guys or gals shoot right for the middle of the green.
Yeah.
And most of the guys came in and said, I shot the best round of the year because of it. And it was the point of it was a lesson of just hitting it to the middle of the green. And I'm just going to add on to that just from my perspective is just think for a moment.
Yeah.
Like stop and think, okay, yes, you have the yardage to the flag, but is it better for you to go long? Is it better for you to miss right? Better to miss left? A lot of people, it's just how far is it? Okay, whack, right? That's so if I add on your
I think
tip,
if you're someone who's truly frustrated with thinking you should shoot lower scores, I think if you went out and just tried to hit the green, there is no question that you will shoot a lower score. because you are going to make much less bogeys, doubles, and triples from on the putting green than off it.
I love it. Dez, thank you so much for coming back. You are always welcome. You can go for the Austin Matthews four-goal game anytime. At this point, you're probably going for Wayne Gretzky's record at the amount of times you've been on this podcast. Actually, I think Kyle Peppers has
been on
more times. Yeah.
Quick side plug for Peppers. He messaged me a couple days ago. He's got a full bag of hockey equipment now.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Can't even skate.
Connor's, yeah, obviously he's going to be Bambi ankle burning out there. But he's,
I noticed he's been hanging around to the rinks.
He wants to get into it. I'm bringing him a pair of mitts when I'm going to Phoenix next week. Yeah. So, yeah, quick plug for Kyle Peppers.
Absolute beauty. Kyle Peppers also got me two handfuls of Bay Hill teas and sent them home with a buddy that was down at Bay Hill. So
beautiful.
Absolute beauty. But seriously, Dez, thank you for coming back on. Thank you for everything. Without you, I truly mean this. I don't think we would be where we're at. You started with one guy on this podcast and it linked to 10 and 20 and women. And so you are the best first guest and we'll have you on anytime you want. So we really appreciate you coming on, man.
Awesome. I look forward to the next time and always really have fun chatting with you.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Well, Players Week, it's exciting. Every shot will be on TV or on your computer or on your tablet, wherever you want. And I'm sure we'll break it all down next week. So we'll see you then. Slow motion in the day like today, my boat's lost in the ocean.